London peaked earlier than other parts of the country. We've always been 2 weeks ahead of the rest of the country, so this doesn't surprise us. And I think it's not a surprise that there is now a lower spread of the virus in London because we're 2 weeks ahead. It's been a monumental effort by Londoners to follow the rules, to stay at home, protect the NHS and save lives. But I think we went into this lockdown with a national response, and we should come out as well with a national response. What we don't want is regional variations that could lead to unintended consequences. So, for example, if lockdown was lifted early in one part of the country, you could see people travelling to that part of the country because the lockdown's been eased.
So do you support primary schools in London, or at least some classes, primary schools in London, opening on the 1st of June?
Yeah, I think the key thing is the public health issues here, the safety of the children, the staff and others in the school. And I think it's going to be a school-by-school assessment. I think the head teacher and the governing body need to be reassured that they've undertaken a risk assessment, and the staff and the children can be taught safely in a school environment. I'm well aware of the huge disruption caused to children's education. Teachers have been working incredibly hard with online education, and many are itching to get back to work, but it's got to be safe.
What proportion of London's primary schools have been partly operating for key workers' children during this lockdown?
The uptake's been quite low, Adam. Roughly speaking, 2% of children have been attending schools physically. Many children have been taking advantage of the online education that's been provided by teachers. And you can understand why parents and carers are a bit cautious sending their children to school, as you heard from the last presentation. We're talking about a figure of 18% infection rates of those below the age of 14. And you can understand why parents are nervous. You can understand why some teachers are a bit concerned about returning to a classroom environment when we're not quite sure how we're dealing with the virus.
Now, the big headache for London is transport, particularly tubes and buses, which can get overcrowded. You reached a financial deal with the government this week, which some are interpreting as you handing back control of London Transport, or Transport for London, to central government. Is that the case?
But this is not a deal I wanted to do as the Mayor of London, but the alternative was for our buses and tubes to stop running at a time. We need to be maximising the services in our buses and our tubes. The deal that we've done with the government means that we accept a grant from the government. We have to borrow £500 million at a time where I've reduced the deficit from £1.5 billion to £200 million. But also we've got to increase the fares that Londoners pay, and also increase the congestion charge from next month as well. So there are lots of strings attached to this deal. It's a bad deal for Londoners, but the alternative was the buses and tubes stopping to run, which I think was unacceptable for me as the mayor.
So what percentage of normal running of buses and tube trains are we going to see now?
So we're already running, as we speak, during the rush hour, more than 65% of our tubes running, roughly speaking 80% of our buses running. For the last few weeks, we've been working with the government to, from the 18th, increase the rush hour tube service by more than 75% and our buses by more than 85%. That's why we were surprised that the Prime Minister, a week early, decided to ease the lockdown. And in the next few weeks, we hope to increase all our services to 100%. But I'd remind your viewers that for us to adhere to social distancing, the actual maximum numbers that can use public transport, even with 100%, is between 13 to 15% of capacity. That's why it's really important for people to work at home and only leave home if they really, really have to. And if they do have to leave home, please walk and cycle where you can. And if you've got to use public transport, avoid the rush hour.
But, you know, that is impossible, really, isn't it? I mean, what you're effectively asking Londoners to do, who've done the right thing that they were told to do, not have cars, use public transport, now being told to go to work, and yet you're telling them don't use the public transport which they're paying for. I mean, is that viable?
Well, here's the good news. Over the last week, we've managed to, in London, increase the space for walking by more than 5,000 square metres. We've also introduced lots of segregated cycleways in London. Over the next few weeks, we will have in London the largest car-free area of any capital city in the world. But it's really important that we realise that this virus could come back quite speedily if we have social interaction on the tubes or the buses. And that's why when people go back to work and they have to use public transport, they'll see social distant marks on the platform of a station. We will still make sure our buses are as safe as they can be, because it's really important. You've seen the progress we've made in relation to the R number, the progress we've made in relation to the far fewer new cases, that we don't inadvertently have a second peak that will overwhelm the NHS.
But my point is whether you call it normal or new normal, it's impossible to return to there, where people are being told not to use their cars, being actively discouraged, the roads are being shut down, and they're being told not to use public transport. I mean, the message is to, you know, get out of London, isn't it?
Well, the new normal will be very different for at least a year, in my opinion. One of the reasons why the deal with the government is just a sticking plaster is we now know that for the foreseeable future, fares won't be enough to pay for our services. Similarly, we've got to realise that many of us who've been able to work from home will have to continue to do so for the foreseeable future. And only if you really, really can't work from home and you have to return to work, should you do so. And even then, please try and avoid the rush hours. We're speaking to employers, we're lobbying the government to try and persuade employers, not just construction sites, but others, to stagger their start and end times to make sure that we can massage the use of public transport so there isn't a big peak during the rush hours. And for those that have to use public transport, they can do it safely. And if you have to use public transport, please wear a non-medical facial covering to stop yourself inadvertently passing from the virus, particularly if you're pre-symptomatic or asymptomatic.
Finally, it hasn't been so bad during the lockdown with a lot of leisure users of bicycles, but anyone who is in central London knows that bike riders are irresponsible and constantly break the laws on the roads, going through red lights, a minority, a significant minority. But if you're going to encourage cycling, are you also going to have proper enforcement of the law on bike riders? Stop them going on pavement, stop them going down one-way streets, stop them going through red lights?
I don't generally accept sweeping generalisations about journalists or about cyclists. The vast majority of cyclists obey the law, cycle safely, and want to cycle because it's the right thing to do for their own personal health, but also because we face a global pandemic.
So do the vast majority of drivers. It doesn't mean there aren't rules that are enforced on drivers of cars. Why can't we have rules enforced on bicyclists?
Well, there are rules for cyclists. Anybody who uses the highway should obey the highway code. And it's really important cyclists obey the highway code and cycle safely, not just for their own personal safety, but for the safety of others as well, not least pedestrians. Whether it's car drivers, lorry drivers, cyclists or pedestrians, all of us should behave in a way that's safe to ourselves.
I understand. I'm asking about enforcement of proper behaviour on cyclists.
Well, the police and others always try to make sure the laws are enforced. The key thing is that we do want to encourage more people to cycle and more people to walk. And I accept, just like there's a small minority of drivers who behave badly, journalists who behave badly, some cyclists behave badly as well. And to make a sweeping generalisation, I think, is unfair. The police will enforce the law, whether that's the law that applies to cyclists.
Do you have any figures on the incidence of actual prosecutions and enforcement of the law on cyclists in London?
We do, not to hand, but I can tweet them later on if you want me to do so. But there have been cases where action has been taken against cyclists. For example, cyclists mustn't go through red lights. Cyclists must make sure that they're cycling in a way that is safe. They must make sure that the cycle is fit to be used on a road. And there are other rules as well. I mean, the highway code applies to all of us, not least cyclists.